Good morning, good day, or good evening, whenever and wherever you are listening. My name is Kevin Fukunaga, and you've joined the Scripts and Scribes Social. Many of us are socially distancing ourselves, so this is our opportunity to hear from other writers who are going through the same experience. Today, we're joined by a TV writer who is currently on the Disney Channel series Sydney to the Max. The second season is currently airing. Prior to that, he's worked in various capacities, such as writer's assistant, showrunner's assistant, and script coordinator on various shows, such as Bones, Las Vegas, Body of Proof, and AP Bio. He's the author of the book Karma Police, and his humorous tweets are the favorites of media outlets like Time, People, and Comedy Central. He is Aaron Weiner. Thanks for coming on, chatting with us today, Aaron.
Oh, sure. Happy to be here.
Now, I'm glad you're joining us. You're on your walk, getting out into nature, which is nice, because I know where a lot of us are holed up for a prolonged period, so it's good you're getting out there and getting some fresh air.
Yeah, it's very important. You know, as a writer, we spend a lot of time inside as it is, so I've become accustomed to taking many, many story walks, I call them, when I get a chance to get out of the office or my home office or wherever it is that I'm working.
Right. Bravo to you for getting out. That's great. And you're multitasking. So you're getting your story walk in and talking to us at the same time. So that's good.
Absolutely. And I also find that getting out there and moving my body, stretching my legs, it actually helps to keep the creative juices flowing. So
yeah. So that's, there you go. You just gave us some advice and didn't even realize it. So how are you holding up during the quarantine? I know you're working on your show, Sydney to the Max. You're working on that right now, currently. How are you holding up, and how are you working?
Yeah, you know, we're really lucky. We're kind of running a virtual room, which a lot of people are doing. And we found out a system very early on that is working for us. And it's been great. You know, I've actually had a lot more time to spend with my my family over the last couple of weeks, you know, losing that commute to and from the office. And we've been able to create some really fun stories for the show, and just really kind of making it work. You know, it's very interesting how we've always been able to kind of adapt to change just as people, you know. Mm-hmm. When challenges come our way, we quickly find ways to make them workable.
Right.
And I think that's what we've kind of done. And that's what we have to continue to do. You know, it's the old improvisation, right? Yes. And something happens in the universe and we try to find a way around it. What is that quote? You know, we make plans and God laughs, something like that.
I don't know that quote, but that's funny.
Yeah. You know, it's become truer than ever these days.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So other than working in your virtual writer's room, which we can definitely get into, what else are you doing during your downtime in the age of coronavirus?
Oh, sure. So you mentioned that that I do spend a lot of time on Twitter. I really enjoy writing material on Twitter. There's so many different types right now, and I think that a lot of people are kind of spending a lot more time on various screens, on Twitter, on, you know, Netflix or Hulu, Disney Plus, a lot of these online platforms. It's very interesting how we've kind of created a world where something as horrible as the situation is just maybe a little bit more digestible with a lot of the innovations that we've had. And so just trying to take advantage of that and also spend time with the family, you know. And I find that those few things put together kind of fill out the day for me, to be honest with you. It's I'm not really looking to kill any more time during the day. It just sort of all kind of gets moshed together now. And I guess is less defined than it used to be. It's all kind of you know, pieces at any given time that fit together, if
right.
That makes any sense.
No, absolutely. And you had mentioned that before we got on the air that you're working on Sydney to the Max season 3, but your second season is currently airing right now, new episodes. For those parents out there, because obviously we don't have a lot of young people listening, I don't think, although if you are, kudos to you. But for all the parents out there, like myself, with kids in that age range, you know, six and up, can you tell us a little bit about City to the Max?
Sure. It's a wonderful family comedy. I'm so lucky to be working on it. It kind of exists in two different timelines. The main story follows Sydney Reynolds, who's a middle schooler, and her father, Max, who live together with Sydney's grandmother and Max's mother, Judy. And the other story in the 90s flashes back to when Sydney's father, Max, was a kid, when he was her age. It's a really fun show, and it really gives people who are in my generation the enjoyment of kind of reliving the 90s. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I love the most about it is as someone who works on the show in a creative capacity, but knowing my friends and the people who are kind of in my generation, being able to reference those fun 90s references is fantastic. We have a great moment in the pilot of the show where Max, as a kid in the 90s, is hanging out with his friend Leo, and he wants to record something with his brand new camcorder, and he picks it up, and it's like this 30-pound, you know, the original camcorder remember from the 90s. And he says something like, I think the line is, it only takes 10 D-cell batteries. You know, and it's just fun to relive those times and to remember, hey, remember we used to do this, remember we used to do that. All those types of fun memories are kind of worked in, you know, throughout and woven throughout the stories.
Well, that's cool too, because for a parent like myself, my son doesn't understand and doesn't necessarily realize some of the technology and things that we had. So to be able to have it integrated into something that they're just watching, I think is kind of fun.
Yeah, it's super fun. You know, I watch a little bit of it with my daughter, and she always finds something fun to identify with in each episode. And I think there's really something for everybody to enjoy, and that's one of the things that I really love about it.
Cool. So maybe you can tell us, we can take a step back, and you can tell us a little bit how you got started in the industry.
Sure. So I went to the University of Florida. And I had a fantastic experience there. And I had a couple friends who moved out here and did an internship at a company called Paramount Classics. It was an independent company, an independent film company owned by Paramount. And, you know, started working for them on the Paramount lot, you know, going to screenings and delivering packages, driving around and just kind of generally enjoying being in Los Angeles. I had never been here before. And, you know, I was kind of driven out here because I was always growing up, I was always the guy who was kind of quoting movies. You know, I didn't really know it at the time. I didn't really understand without the perspective I have now what I was doing. But really what I was doing was I was identifying relatable story beats in life. You know, somebody would say something like, how time moves fast. And I would quote Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and they would say like, what are you talking about? And I would say, oh, you know, like Ferris Bueller's Day Off. And they'd be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And so a lot of that stuff kind of happened over the years. And I started to realize that I had basically memorized quite a few films that I had watched over the years and was applying them in my daily life. And when I realized that that kind of thing was happening, I learned that I was sort of on a track to, if I was presented the opportunity, be somebody who would write material or produce material in some capacity. And that's what led me out here. I originally came out to be a film producer. That was the goal. And at the time, that was the track that people were pursuing who kind of had this, you know, very vague general skill set that I felt that I had. And, you know, over the course of my career, just because of the nature of the business and how it's changed, have found myself, where I am, which is what I think is the place where most content is being generated these days, most premium content. And, you know, that's writing for television.
Right. And I noticed that looking at your resume, your bio, you've worked in a lot of different genres, from comedy to drama to family. You've worked on a bunch of different shows. What have you learned from working in both comedy and drama?
Yeah, so that's a very good question. I think that the most interesting thing that I've learned, and one of my bosses throughout, you know, coming out here, I once talked to him about this a little bit, and I basically said, he asked me the question, like, do you know which genre you want to work in moving forward? Because that's something that I think a lot of people were asking during the time that I came up in my career. I think there was a lot more trying to find a niche for somebody who was going to write in the business going on. Where do you want to be? Where do you see yourself?
Mm-hmm.
Not so much anymore. I find that a lot of people are kind of more playing more the journeyman and moving throughout genres. But at the time it was, you know, do you want to write procedurals? Do you want to write serial? Do you want to write, you want to write sitcoms? Do you want to write single cam? And so at the time he was asking me that question, and I sort of said, I don't really know. I for me, it's really about the story and the idea and finding the most efficient way to tell that story or present that idea. And this particular boss who I had was one of the first people to actually react positively to that statement. And he said something, I don't know exactly what it was, but it was something to the idea of, well, they're all the same anyway. And I said, well, what do you mean by that? I'm just curious. And he said, well, you just have a person or a group of people trying to get from point A to point B, and you throw a bunch of obstacles in the middle of them, and it's either funny or sad when they try to and ultimately get past those obstacles. And I was like, I don't know if that makes sense. And then over the years, as it's sort of marinated, it's made more and more sense to me.
Right. So you have worked in a number of the support staff positions, from writer's assistant to showrunner's assistant, script coordinator. We've asked the question before, but I like to get different perspectives on it. Can you break down the different positions that you've worked in and how they fit into the writer's room?
Sure. So I've done all of them. I was a writer's production assistant on a show called Body of Proof that was on ABC. It was a drama. And that job is very much like a support staff only type of role. And, you know, it's basically taking lunch orders, organizing the room, organizing the craft service area or snack area in the writer's kitchen, doing coffee runs, and sort of being around in case opportunities arise for you to step in to take some responsibility from the writer's assistant or the script coordinator. And, you know, that was a role that I took very seriously. I actually wrote a piece on Huffington years ago about my experience doing that I posted on my Twitter today.
Oh.
And so that's out there if people want to read it. But I took that experience very seriously, and I actually tried to look at the time to innovate that position. I actually created a document every week there that was a compilation of interesting tidbits that the writer's department might want to use in episodes, and I sent it out to everyone. It was kind of a mishmash of news stories, fun ideas for, suspects or crimes or, you know, just kind of a collection of the day's news, and compiled it every week and sent it out to everybody. And it was pretty well received. It was a fun experience, and it was a way for me to try to, you know, shake things up and innovate and do something new. I've also been a writer's assistant on multiple shows, and that's different based on whether you're working in comedy or drama.
Mm-hmm.
right now I work on a comedy that's more of like a sitcom style show. So the script coordinator and the writer's assistant, usually on those shows, both spend time in the room taking notes, helping to organize story documents and to distribute them. And so, you know, that's kind of how it works in a comedy. But in a drama, it's sometimes different. In drama, a lot of times the writer's assistant is the person who's predominantly in the room, and the script coordinator is the one who is prepping and distributing documents.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so I've kind of done both, all three jobs, but both of the writer's assistant and the script coordinator job on a few different types of shows. And then there's also differences in being a writer's assistant and a script coordinator on a single camera show and a multi-camera show when you're working in comedy, because the process is way different. You know, on a single camera show, you're out shooting in different places. On a multi-camera show, which is predominantly what I work on, you're shooting for the most part on stage, and you're going to run throughs and rewriting a script 3, 4, 5 times before you actually shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the type of show that I work on now, where we have a couple of, you know, rehearsals where we go and we watch and we kind of adjust and perfect the material as we see it.
Right. And how did you land your first television position in terms of like a support TV support staff?
Sure, sure. So that's a very good question. I was actually part of a bowling league that met once a week in Mar Vista. I think it's called Bolero now, but at the time it was called Mar Vista Lanes.
Right. And is it on Venice?
Exactly. It's on Venice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we got involved because a friend of ours ran the league. And a few years in, he actually handed it over to us to run. There were like 3 or 4 of us who ran the league. And there had to have been, I want to say like 100 to 150 people were in this league.
Wow.
And yeah, and they were all people who were kind of our generation in entertainment. We had actors, we had people who wanted to be producers, people who wanted to be writers, just kind of people from all walks of life in the entertainment business. And it was a great networking activity and we had a lot of fun and actually got pretty good at bowling, which is kind of strange. I was definitely that guy who had like the bag that had like 2 bowling balls in it. You know, like, I
really?
Feel like some people have 1 bowling ball.
Yeah.
I had one for, like, you know, closing out those spares.
Oh.
And I think that was the moment when I realized that things had become fairly serious for me as a bowler.
Do pro bowlers have multiple bowling balls for different things?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh,
I believe they have multiple balls for doing the same things. And I think maybe that was the step that I did not ultimately end up taking. So I guess you could say I reached the intermediate stage of that. But the point is I really enjoyed being in this league. I had a lot of fun, and there was a guy who was on a rival team one day who I met and got to know really well. And he knew that I wanted to be a writer, wanted to work for writers. And he just turned out randomly that his brother was a writer. I didn't know any of this. And that he had just signed a deal at CBS television.
Hmm.
And it was like an overall deal there for development. And he needed an assistant and he didn't really know anyone who would come work for him with very short notice. I was looking to make a move and he was like, hey, why don't you meet with my brother? He needs an assistant on his deal. And I went and I met with him. And it was kind of just one of those random stories that you hear about. And I really lucked out in having that experience because this guy is still very much around in my life. And, you know, this is like, I don't even know how many years later. It's got to be almost 15 years later.
Yeah.
You know, just very talented, very storied TV writer who whose relationship I value highly.
That's very cool. And it's a testament to the old adage of it's not what you know, it's who you know. It's networking is really super important. And your bowling league obviously ended up being a great opportunity.
Yeah. And, you know, just more to that point, there are maybe, I would say, five or six other situations that I can remember vividly where there's one specifically where this is probably maybe 7 or 8 years ago. I think it was like 10 or 10:30 at night, and I had been dating my wife for a long time at this point, and I don't think we were married yet. I'm not sure if we were or not, but we were definitely not going out past 10 anymore, if you know what I mean.
Right,
and,
right.
And so I got a call from my cousin who I'm pretty close with, who lives out here. And he was like, I'm out at this bar hanging out, and our friend, we have this mutual friend who's an actor who, you know, has a very interesting story. He was a bartender out here for many years and has found a ton of success lately, in television. He was out with my cousin and they were all hanging out, and my cousin was calling to tell me that he had just booked the lead on a network pilot.
Oh, cool.
And he was like, you got to come out because I'm talking to the writers and they're such cool guys and they remind me of you. And, you know, I want to introduce you to them. And I sort of like put my hand over the bottom of the phone, the way that you would imagine that happening. And I turned to my nap and I said, hey, would you mind if I back dressed and like went out to a bar right now? And it was kind of an awkward thing, and she was like, oh no, like what's going on? And I told her, and I went out that night and I met these two guys, and they're just also people who I've known now for years, who are just incredibly exceptional writers, who ended up creating this show with my friend, this actor, and it was very successful, and these guys have gone on to find tremendous success. And I think it also speaks to the idea that, sure, you know, it's who you know and you know, networking, but it's also about getting out there, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Leaving everything that you know to be safe. And you know, I think a lot of writers are kind of more of these introverted type of people, the way that I am. Just getting out there and talking to people and telling them what you do and how you do it, and you know, sharing your goals and your passions and, you know, finding ways to work with people.
Right. And again, going back to your coming out and, you know, all of these different opportunities that you've been able to make for yourself and find, because we do get often asked a lot, do I have to move to Los Angeles to become a writer? And as a screenwriter, many people say, no, you can do it elsewhere as long as you're willing to come to LA on occasion for meetings, some meetings and things. But for TV, it's sort of crucial. For somebody who did come out and did find success, why is it important for TV writers, you know, writers who want to write for television specifically, to come out to LA?
Okay, well, so that's a very interesting question. It's a very complicated question to answer. And I first want to say that I don't think that there's any tried and true 100% this is the way that it is answer for any of these questions.
Sure.
But what I will say is that for me, it was incredibly helpful for me to not only be in Los Angeles, but also to be in writers' rooms to learn how to be a writer on a television show. And, you know, that is sort of the general answer, but getting more specific, things like knowing how to act in a writer's room, the way that people speak, the way that people share and react to ideas, the flow, the workflow of a writer's room, getting to know how different writer's rooms work, being able to, you know, how we said before, like improv, yes, and these are all types of things that are kind of on the job training, if you will. Does that mm-hmm. make sense?
Yeah.
things that you, as somebody who would come into that situation cold, might not necessarily know. Hey, when I said before, this isn't a hard and fast rule. You know, I do know, and I have known many writers who I've worked on shows with who did not have any of that knowledge, who came in cold to shows. And sometimes that situation worked out and sometimes it didn't. I would tell you specifically for me, it's been incredibly helpful that I have had that experience. You know, one of the things that I pride myself on even to this day is the fact that I am either, I'm not sure if I'm like approaching or if I just crossed 200 episodes of television writer's room experience.
Wow.
But, you know, that is something that is something I talk about with people who I meet with all the time. And I don't know that a lot of people have that, not necessarily even at my level, but in general. And being able to kind of talk about that experience is incredibly beneficial for me, just because it's across genres, like we said before, and across sort of different writing disciplines. Just having that general knowledge, I think, is crucial in certain situations.
Right. And like you said, also, every writer's room is different. So getting to experience different writer's rooms and interacting with different people and different showrunners, I think, is also incredibly valuable.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I remember specifically there was a show where I came in to fill in for somebody last minute as a script coordinator. It was a pilot and very short notice. And I think it was pretty far along. It was probably halfway or three quarters of the way through being rewritten and shot. And you know, I came into this room cold. I didn't know anyone. I think it was maybe the line producer who brought me in. And at the end of the pilot, the two guys who wrote it came over to me. We were all kind of out celebrating the completion of the pilot. And they both came up to me and told me individually that they were really impressed by my ability to kind of read the room immediately and to kind of know what was going on. And both individually mentioned that each of the writers who were there, they all kind of knew each other, but they all said something to them to the effect of like, who is this guy? And, you know, where did you find him? And they were all really impressed by my ability to be in there and just kind of hit the ground running. And that really is just because of the fact that at that point I had probably worked on, I don't know, 8 to 10 shows in different rooms and just sort of picked up what I knew generally about how these things ran, but also was able to recognize things that were different about this particular room and just kind of was able to adapt.
Right. And you had mentioned that some of the things you picked up and learned from these different writer's rooms you've been in was how to act in a writer's room or how to speak or the workflow. Can you go into a little bit of detail some of the things that entails? Like, what do you mean by that?
Sure. So knowing when to pitch in general, knowing whether your idea, your pitch, your joke is something that is in the world of what people are looking for, waiting for the right time in that general arena to present itself, knowing when the moment is. You know, even giving something a moment in your mind to solidify. And, you know, these are all things that are, you know, to be honest with you, the first couple times you get into a room, it's terrifying. And so just sort of knowing all those things and being able to do those things, you know, in a certain way is incredibly helpful. Being able to pitch with confidence and you know, speak loudly and project your voice. These are all things that they sound silly, but when you're actually there and doing them, they're very far from that.
Mm-hmm. And being a member of the support staff, writer's assistant, showrunner's assistant, script coordinator, they're all in the writer's room. So you're learning and working and being creative and making the show. Before we get into a freelance, you know, getting an episode, a freelance episode, which is not easy to do, I want to talk a little bit about, like, a lot of writers think that you write a script, you get hired, and you're a staff writer, which can happen, but the route, you know, gaining the trust of a showrunner and other writers and producers and sort of earning your stripes, so to speak, is a lot more common. But for those writers out there who are interested in following your path or the path of a lot of writers through the support staff chain, what are some things that they should know? What are skills that are helpful to have? What are things that will allow them to make that transition to from, you know, somebody who has never worked on a show or a production to ease that transition into a writer's room?
Yeah, I mean, that's also a very tricky question. But I will say that it's important to go out and meet people who are doing that work. You know, one of the great things about the internet, Twitter specifically, is that it provides an outlet for you to engage and connect with people who are doing this work. I saw something incredible today, just kind of in the world that we're living in. There was a writer who I went to go see a panel where this incredible writer spoke, and went on Twitter today in the wake of kind of what's going on with coronavirus, and said that they want to send people grocery money.
Oh yeah,
I saw that. For people to send them their username, and the idea that that type of thing is happening now is incredible. And I will say that I know there are probably a lot of people who are listening to this who are saying, well, you know, I don't live anywhere near LA and I want to be a writer. You know, those are potential first steps, is like finding the people who make the television that you want to watch and you want to write. And, you know, following them on Twitter, reading some things that they've written, you know, getting out there and trying to connect with them however you can. I mean, you know, obviously not stalking them, but, right. You know, the point I'm trying to make is there are ways to connect with people now that you didn't have before.
Sure.
When I was talking before about how, when I was a kid, I would quote movies and people didn't have any idea what I was talking about. And they would say, Aaron, what are you saying? You're not making any sense. You know, the internet has basically created a world where you can find all of those people and put them all into the same space, whether it's a physical space or a virtual space. People can connect in ways that they couldn't before. And I think that's a tremendous resource for people who can't necessarily be in any particular physical location at any given time.
Right.
The other thing that I'll say is, I think it was Steve Martin who said, be so good they can't ignore you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is something that is really kind of become way more important for me lately, because that's like really that's a relevant idea more today than I think it's ever been. There are so many voices out there. You know, I focus a lot on Twitter, but like there are also so many platforms, you know, that a lot of the kids on my show are starting to get into TikTok. You know, this is a big platform now. And
mm-hmm.
There's so many different places where you can be relevant, right? But even being relevant in one place is not necessarily enough anymore. I do have a lot of friends who kind of work in the social media space. And it's really overwhelming when you look at the data. And so you really have to be great at what you do, whatever it is that you do. If you're a joke guy, if you're a story guy, you know, if you're kind of like, I guess I was saying before that you're like a, you know, a quote guy, or I guess that would be what I was saying about being a story guy earlier, about identifying story beats in films and relating them to modern day. But, you know, whatever it is that you do, whatever it is that you're great at, being able to to say that you've kind of mastered that area before you connect or while you're connecting, and making those connections is incredibly important. So really putting in the work. I think that very early on in my career, I made the choice to obviously to move out here and start working in rooms and working for writers. And I think I was sort of aware of it at the time, but not fully aware of where I would be now. But I mean, I have far surpassed the 10,000 hour rule. You know, I don't know if you've ever heard that before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I think that was around the time naturally where I just started to kind of feel like, oh, I can do this job, you know? And I think everybody gets to that point who sort of, you know, becomes a professional at what they do, where you say like, okay, I get the general idea of what this is and I know how to do it. And again, we're always getting better. We're always improving, and that's part of it. But knowing that you've reached a certain level is very important. And, you know, you can do that here. You can do that anywhere.
Now,
but it does help to be here.
Yeah, no, yeah, it does. Especially for television, but we've had on other veteran support staffers, like Amy Thurlow, our interview with Amy, who has not yet gotten her chance, her shot at an episode, you know, writing an episode, and someone like Brendan Gallagher, who actually was hired on staff for the first time this year, from his, obviously, his writer's assistant job. And you are sort of that other category of support staffer who gets hired to write a freelance episode. Can you talk us through the process of how that came about and how you put yourself in a position to do that?
Yeah, I mean, again, I think it's a very tricky question to answer. And I know it's, I think there were various parts of my career where this is the answer that I wanted. That I wanted somebody to give me. The best advice I can give based on my particular experience is to be out there meeting the people who do the work that you do. You know, my boss on my show, I've worked for a while now and has kind of seen what I've been able to do, and the contributions that I've made on the show. And, you know, it's like any business where you work with people and they, you sort of get to a point where you have a level of rapport with them, where they become open to your ideas, and you hopefully at the same time get better at generating and sharing those ideas. And then you sort of get to a point where, both sides hopefully realize that there's a desire for things to move forward. And that's kind of what happened for me on the show. And I will also say, because I would have wanted somebody to say this to me throughout the years in my journey out here, that a lot of times that doesn't happen. You know, a lot of times you work on a show for a long time, for me, a few different times, thinking that something is going to happen and it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to sort of bounce back from that and readjust and reinvent yourself and move forward is tremendously difficult. I think for me it was harder like the first time it happened, and then it got progressively easier every time it happened. But you know, it's a process. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I think the most important thing is to be resilient and to keep getting better at the things that you can control, and to also try not to pay attention to all the things that you can't.
Right. And I asked this to Brendan Gallagher the other day, and I'm going to relay it to you as well. How do you know, if you know, or are there any signs that when you meet with a showrunner that you have the inkling that they may be the type to give support staffers, hopefully, potentially, an opportunity if they prove themselves, versus those who basically are hiring assistants to do that job and that job only?
Right. So here's what I'll say about that. I think that there are people who I've worked for where I knew going in before I even worked for them that they were not those types of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people who I've worked for going in where it was kind of unknown.
Right.
And here's the thing. I'm trying to think of a way to like tell this story very generally. I worked on a show. I'll just tell the story, but very generally. I worked on a show where it was sort of known that you were, that if you worked on the show, it was a great show, but like they were not going to give people opportunities to move forward on this mm-hmm. show. And I worked there for a long time, and I tried to be the exception to the rule. You know, I did everything that I could to differentiate myself and you know, wow everybody around me and just kind of do a bunch of things that like were new and fun and unique and things that I thought maybe would turn people's heads. And they didn't. And that was a really hard thing for me to deal with. But here's the thing. I left that show after years, and a funny thing happened, and this is not the first time that I've had, when I've told this story, other people who are have kind of been doing this work as long as I have said, oh yeah, you know, that happened on a show that I worked on too. The show changed hands. Other people took over the show, and when that happened, the culture changed. And on this particular show, I think it was 2 years after I left, the show changed hands, and every single person who I had worked with started to move up.
I gotcha.
And I worked on a movie a few years ago, and I was near the office where this show was, and I went to go visit a friend of mine who was working on the show at the time, and this was. He had been there since I left, which is like many years, and had just kind of kept moving up every season. And it was a surreal experience because it really kind of gave me, not only did it teach me this lesson that I'm sort of trying to say, which is that ultimately you can't control anything. And even when you think you know something, you don't,
mm-hmm.
but also that this gave me like that sort of, you mentioned my book Karma Police, but like, it's all the kind of same story. Like It's a Wonderful Life, you know, Family Man, all these movies in this genre of like giving you a glimpse of like how your life may have turned out had you not made this one choice.
Right, right.
And you know, I think about that a lot and I laugh because like I said before, you think you know, but you never really know. And I just keep coming back to what are the things that I can control? What are the things that I can do well? How do I become the best at doing those things? And I think that ultimately, if you stick it out and you get to a point where you can create great material, whatever it is that material is, and you can do it consistently, that there is definitely a spot for you in pursuing that craft.
Right. Now, whether through your own material, when you were first getting started or when you were submitting, you know, passing on your scripts to mid-levels and upper levels. And I'm sure you've done it with your friends and associates as well, who are also support staffers. What are some of the things that newer writers should be very cognizant of before handing over a script to a professional to look at, to read?
Sure. That's a very good question. Again, I will preface this by saying that each specific situation is unique. I do not claim to have the 100% answer to this question. All right. I can do is speak from personal experience.
That's why we're talking to you. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I will say is that Whenever somebody gives me a script to read, which happens very often,
sure.
If it's something that's specific to my genre that I'm working on, that's one of the first things that I look at is does this look like the material that I am working on?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's incredibly important because Sure, it's important to be funny. You know, like I said, I work on a sitcom now. It's important to be funny, and it's important to be able to tell a joke. And, you know, that's incredibly valuable. But, you know, these staffs, there are incredible talents on these staffs. And I would like to say that being able to tell a joke is enough these days, but it really, from what I've seen, it's not. If you want to work in my specific genre of television, you need to know how to tell a story. You need to know how to structure that story. You need to know how to set up scenes and acts, and you need to be able to flesh out characters and show me how those characters are unique and unique from each other, and use their individual and group dynamics to be able to deliver material and scenes that is dynamic and fun and brings volume to the material and to the page. And I know that this sounds like really overwhelming and a lot, but this is kind of what it is. That's the type of stuff that I look for. And, you know, I always talk about sort of the steps that I encountered as a writer kind of coming up in terms of proficiency. You know, I've been doing this for, well, I don't know if I want to date myself, but a while now. And I will say that it took me many years to be able to write a script where if I gave it to 10 people, they would all know and be able to tell me what it was about, like in two or three sentences. And I know that sounds wild, but you know, these things are, you don't just write one or two scripts. You know, this is a long process. And with each script that you write, you get better at maybe one or two, or if you're lucky, three things. And you got to get to the point where you're really good at all these different things. And once you get to that point, you can start writing scripts from the beginning where you are aware of these things early on, and you can address them early on, and you kind of get to the point where you can develop and write a script that has a level of proficiency that people will recognize who are reading these things. But again, like I said before, it's about putting in the work and focusing and, you know, excelling in your craft.
A lot of people think they write one script or maybe two and they send them out and they hope to get a manager and get signed and get staffed, and that's their rocket ship to success. How many scripts had you written approximately before you got your first freelance episode, you know, of a TV series?
I don't know. I mean, I've never really counted them. And also it's hard to know because it's like I said before, working, I made it my job to make money working on shows. Mm-hmm. So I was in these rooms working on episodes that I wasn't writing, but I was there for them.
Sure.
In the breaking and experiencing how that all worked. So I was getting that knowledge. I was sort of like ingesting that knowledge, even though I wasn't doing it on my own.
Right.
Which is incredibly, in retrospect, incredibly valuable for me now. But I guess on my own, I would say, I don't know, 30 or 40.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of the point is we've heard anywhere from 10 on the low end to, 30, 40 scripts, you know, before people got paid to write something, you know. So it's not uncommon. It's far more uncommon, if not, I don't want to say impossible, because nothing's impossible, but very rare for someone to write their first or second script and have that be the start of their career in that sense. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah. And you know what? I actually, I touch on this in the article I mentioned before that I posted on Twitter, but I think this is an important thing to say. And whenever I talk about this stuff, I always think about the type of things that I would want to hear when I was younger.
Right.
And this is something I really want to share with everyone listening, is that, when we tell stories about, especially, I mean, not to like rat on my own craft, but when we tell stories for the big screen and for TV, a lot of times we tend to like romanticize the growing moments, right? Like think about montages and you know, overnight successes. These are things that are fun to watch and we enjoy seeing them, but that really has not been the reality for me. And for a lot of the people who I know who are, incredibly talented working writers, it's actually quite the opposite. And I think it's important that we, as professionals in this industry, talk about the idea of putting in the time and putting in the work, because that's not necessarily something that people are hearing. I think a lot of people are hearing the story of, I wrote one script, or, you know, I just had this idea and I put it down, and then I flew to Hollywood and I knew this person. And we like to tell that story because it's fun, but it's really, it's not the real story that I've experienced and people I know have experienced.
Right. Now, I know you've got to get back to work. You're sort of in that break period because you're actually on a show right now. You're one of the fortunate ones. And normally we get sort of film, TV, book recommendations from people to, you know, for those that aren't on a show or aren't working now and have a little bit extra free time, you know, what are you binging kind of thing. And since you've said you don't have as much time to do that, what I'm going to ask is, tell us a little bit about your book, Karma Police, and so we can recommend it. Like,
sure. So it's kind of based on the idea of, if you've ever asked yourself the question, like, is life fair, or do people get what's coming to them? Is there any sort of karmic balance in the world? The idea is that there actually are a group of people whose job that is. And the book sort of takes us on a journey where they recruit a new member and take him on his first case. And at the time that I came up with this idea, I was obviously listening to a lot of Radiohead and enjoying it very much, and was starting to see the sort of the cross-pollination opportunity for music and written material, and was very much in this headspace of, you know, what do people gravitate toward when they're looking for something to watch? And one of the things that I think about a lot whenever I'm developing a new project is, what are people out there thinking? And at this time in my life, and with what was going on at the time in the world, I really just kept coming back to the idea of people out there wondering, like, what is going on, and is any of this fair?
Mm-hmm.
And that is what kind of led me to this idea of, you know, trying to build a world around that idea, and trying to build characters who represented different points of view and, you know, represented different areas for investigation into that idea. And so that's kind of what led me there. And, you know, it's a fun project. It's kind of like one of my passion projects. Maybe one day I'll be able to make the show. But I got some very good advice a while back that people liked this. I had written a script for it and people liked the script. And somebody said to me, you know, have you thought about turning it into a novella? And I really liked that idea. And I had just happened to have been working for a writer at the time who I was helping to republish an old piece of fiction that he had written. And so I was in that space already and thought, you know, hey, I can do this for myself at the same time. And that was what led me to get that done. So it's a really fun read. It's a very quick read. Since it was a pilot, it's kind of like, I think people I know who have read it in like an hour and a half. And, you know, like I said, hopefully I'll be able to write more episodes and develop it and make the show one day.
Very cool. Yeah. Well, we'll link to it for sure. Thank you so much for your time, Aaron. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it. And I hope I've been a fun guest.
Yeah. And be sure to follow Aaron on Twitter to get all of his Twittery goodness, and it's at Wiener Aaron. That's W-I-E-N-E-R-A-A-R-O-N. We'll also have a link to that if you didn't feel like writing it all down. So be sure to follow Aaron on Twitter. And to everybody, remember, we're all in this together. So stay safe, be well, and we will see you next week.